Again, it's the Taylor Report, and I am Phil Taylor, your host. I want to say something, a couple of things about the unfolding news, and every day is Trump Day, as we all know, are getting used to the idea. Probably one of the most urgent matters I think we need some clarity about. We tried to talk about this on the show last week to underline it. Is that people are suspicious or now hostile, as they should be, to the way the most powerful leader in the Western world disports himself, that is Trump, reckless, really provocative language, causing everyone to talk about him all the time, throws everybody off balance by announcing policies by the hour. And one of the things that has happened is that we now have a kind of a new agenda around the issue of the special military operation, as it's called in Russia, with vis-a-vis Ukraine. And you will notice the zigzags that are taking place here, the chaos that it's brought about in Ottawa, in London, Paris, Berlin. I hate to say the name Berlin, as though somebody there could solve a problem. and that is that Trump's initiated a meeting with the Russian leaders, discussions, and immediately everyone here fell to the ground and began to pull their hair, saying that he and Putin are going to try to rule the world. And this was just absolutely childish and very dangerous, because the discussion became, are you with Putin? Is Trump being with Putin by saying he's going to cause a ceasefire and a peaceful resolution? And then, of course, Trump changed course and began to say, okay, I've talked now. Well, of course, he had his moment with Zelensky, where everybody said, oh, now they're completely falling out and disaster is on the horizon, and London and Paris will have to step in and do all the fighting. And just amazing, childish, ahistorical approach to a question. But as I said, the zigzag is in, because after the kerfuffle at the White House, then there was further talk, and then Zelensky, Trump told us, had agreed to a 30-day truce. And then we heard a new term. I'm sure you are aware of it. He says, everyone, London, Paris, Ottawa, U.S. State Department said, the ball is now in Russia's court. No, it's not. This is absurd. The Russians, said on the Taylor Report, and others have said it, nobody was talking to them about, you know, this matter of getting Zelensky on side, or the matter of how to end the war. The talk was all here. This was all oriented from based on Western Europe and America, our little club of colonial imperialist powers. The British Empire, remember that? It hasn't gone away. They have a Navy, Air Force. They're major part of NATO. There's France. And, of course, U.S. and others. And all they were doing was talking amongst themselves. And when they had all sort of semi-agreed, because now that Trump has said, okay, it's going to be 30 days, and now everyone turns towards Russia. Well, you can't have an agreement unless the other party is spoken to. And unless, by the way, journalists report what they're saying. But we have a media class who are just contemptible. They don't say, well, clearly this is all problematic, because when did Russia suggest a 30-day pause? And what, by the way, do they want? Because if you're going to have an agreement, people have to put their wants on the table. And but media here, despite all their hair pulling and yelling about Trump, they do not conscientiously report from the world's capitals what is the political opinion of the leaders and governments. Now we're in this situation where we're supposed to all begin to say that Russia has to agree to this. They never said what they thought of it, other than to say they believe in a settlement. And President Putin of Russia, I'm not going to call him dirty names because I don't see the value of that. And I think it's part of the way that we ruin any possibility of peaceful resolution of issues is to engage in name-calling. I'll make an exception in the case of Trump, because that's what he does for a living. But the Putin response, as near as I can make out, and it's not that they're incoherent, it's just it's underreported, but what they said was, sure, yes, we would agree to a ceasefire. However, you better have conditions. They have a 2,000-kilometer front. 2,000 kilometers, that's a lot of territory, which is being contested over by two large armies. And there are pockets where one army has advanced into the territory of the other to greater and lesser depth. And if you're going to stop the fighting, those people who are those generals on either side who are responsible, they want to know, well, okay, 30 days, am I going to be able to rearm, or are we agreeing not to rearm? And is this a commitment to a larger agreement? Because wars are fought for reasons. I hate to say that. I know that wars are terrible, but they also fought for reasons. And the people, commanders and leaders, have what we call bottom lines. They won't go beyond a certain point. So what are they? I'm not going to attempt to summarize them, but I would say that it is time to actually share with our audiences and the larger, greater audiences of France and Britain and United States, Canada, the terms. Because one of the reasons we are in this crisis is because the population has never been properly informed as to how the issue between Ukraine and Russia is defined by the Russian government. Instead, it's been characterized, summarized, mocked, or cynically commented on from here. That isn't analysis. It's just propaganda. My memory of the most important moment prior to the Russian intervention was that they said Western governments, primarily the United States, of course, are providing material and money and using sanctions and tariffs and whatnot to assist the Ukrainian forces against us. This is prior to the intervention. But roughly the language, because they were referring to the eastern territories, primarily, we could just say Donetsk region, Russian-speaking regions of eastern Ukraine, where there's been fighting for about 8 years. And Western governments were happily helping out with that, trying to capture that territory of a population that did not want to be ruled by Kiev. At any rate, here's what Russia did. Lavrov, I remember the letters. They're public, and people should read them. They said they want to know what – they want a clear declaration from Western powers, but specifically the United States. They wanted to know what their intentions were. They wanted to know if they want to negotiate the issue of the self-determination of the people of Eastern Ukraine who had lost their rights, cultural, linguistic, and religious rights under the Kiev regime. And the Kiev regime was also threatening to fighting for wider fighting around in the Black Sea and the Sea of Azov. And they said this has to end because there will be we'll have to intervene if it doesn't. And here's what they said: we are tired of dealing with the United States because their word is no good. We meet them and they say things to us, but it's never in writing, and so therefore we require from you, Washington, D.C., a written response. And they pointed out that other parties would have to be involved because the U.S. had not been a trustworthy partner. Now, we used to laugh at that in Canada, certainly the Canadian government did. Now the Canadian government says you can't trust the United States. You can't trust Trump. So welcome to the club. The Russians said that when they tried to have a peaceful resolution prior to their entry into Ukraine over the issue of the security of Eastern Russian population, Russian speakers of Eastern Ukraine. And they said at the end of their letter, this is the last time we're going to send you a letter. We expect a prompt and detailed response. If we don't get that, we are reserving our right to correct a situation that we find intolerable. We have our security to worry about. We have the Russian people to protect. So if we don't hear from you in writing, this is the end of our little colloquy with you. That was how that situation evolved. And so here we are now in March 2025, and this is what we once again are facing. The failure of our government and of the United States to be clear about the fact that they're not the only party to this dispute, that they don't get to determine how everything's going to go. This to say that there's 30 days and the Russians must accept or bear the consequences, that is not a peace formula. That's a war formula. And you get whiplash trying to follow Foreign Minister Jolie or the Secretary of State of the United States or Macron, who is out of his mind. Macron is a very dangerous figure at this moment because he's actually talking about, oh, we can send French troops to Ukraine if we feel like it. I would say to him, well, I wouldn't act on that. But so far, everybody has been pretty irrational. So far, people have been behaving precipitously and dangerously. So I wouldn't expect that there'd be any change. Well, at any rate, this is Taylor Report, CIUT. I just want to remind you of that and just to say, Everybody better be wide awake. And please be a real citizen of the world. Be a real member of the UN. Say to all major media, please print on one page or two the entire statement of Russia on the question of how to resolve the current crisis. Because if you do not know that, you'll walk straight into a flaming building. This is Taylor Report. We have a very interesting piece of music apropos of the tariffs and how Canada's viewed. And this is an old song from the Travelers some time back, and you'll get a kick out of it, I bet.
Oh, we share a common border with the country that you know. Just take a look at your atlas, it's the one that's down below. There's 50 states in the Union, and something should be done to forget the war of 1812 and make it 51. There'll be color television, social security, racial segregation, and the Birch Society. You can take the Fifth Amendment, you can vote for LBJ. You can even burn your draft card when we're Canada, USA.
Now some folks think we're English, which isn't true at all.
And some think we're a colony that's run by Charles de Gaulle.
But we're looking up to greater things upon that glorious day, when the capital of our little state is Ottawa, CA.
There's a bunch of stripes and 50 stars upon the Yankee flag.
There's gonna have to be 51 when Canada's in the bag.
But when we see the flag unfurled, we'll know we won the fight.
We'll be just before Connecticut in the third row from the right. There'll be color television, social security, racial segregation, and the Birch Society. You can cheer for Jimmy Hoffa, you can join the Klan today. You can even be a Nazi when we're Canada, USA.
We'll all be very affluent in the great society. The buck is worth a dollar, ten in Canadian currency.
The economy's sure to take a boost, it's very evident
that it costs us more to feed a queen than pay a president. There'll be color television, social security, racial segregation, and the Birch Society. You can take the Fifth Amendment, you can vote for LBJ. You can even burn your draft card when we're Canada, USA.
There'll be no more selling prairie wheat to all the commie crew.
There'll be no more Cuban sugar, that's very naughty too.
But think of all the benefits that surely have to come
when we're citizens of a country that's got the atom bomb. There'll be color television, social security, racial segregation, and the Birch Society. You can cheer for Jimmy Hoffa, you can join the Klan today.
You can even be a Nazi
when we're Canada, USA.
Somewhat apropos, don't you think? That was the Travelers. Canada, USA. You can, by the way, you can find it online. A little too prophetic. I like the point about the atom bomb. Of course, we also have the hydrogen bomb. This is the Taylor Report, and again, I'll tell you, you can find us on Spotify at bit.ly/Taylor-report. We have a problem, I believe, that I don't understand why it's not being addressed. We had Premier Ford went to Washington, and we have this expression, Team Canada. Two federal ministers went along to Washington, and they met with the American Treasury Secretary. He is a federal. He is a national leader of the, you know, of the entire United States. He speaks for the United States. As I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong. Doug Ford is the premier of Ontario. The media here haven't pointed out to us. Maybe they think it's it shouldn't show confusion in the face of a country that's bringing down tariffs on Canada. But actually, that was an embarrassment. There were two press conferences, press statements after. All of the Canadian media went down and hung out at the door of the American Treasury Department, I guess, stood out in the cold and waited for Doug to come out. And Doug came out and said that he'd had a very good meeting, the best meeting he'd ever had, and a lot of progress was made. So, question, what progress? Could you put your finger on something? No, a lot of progress. And then he kind of went hubba hubba about how wonderful the Treasury Secretary of the United States was. How, gee, that guy is sharp. He's shrewd. He's a real businessman. I don't know if it's any of your business, Doug. This is the problem. This is actually a problem. That wasn't Team Canada. That was Team Tory. The reason they let him come down and have the meeting was because they wanted to show that Canada is completely confused. It doesn't even know how to engage in meetings of peers. The only person who should have been meeting with the Secretary of the Treasury of the United States, if there was going to be a meeting, and it should have been agreed to by them, we're told that, and even Rosemary Brown of the CBC said, well, he did, he was able to arrange the meeting, Doug was. Well, of course he was. They're playing the so-called Team Canada and showing that it's a joke. I saw the Secretary of the Treasury of the U.S., only minutes before he met with the Tory team, the Tory-led team. There were two federal ministers there. I guess they were to be in the room so that nothing was given away without their at least hearing about it. So it was a meeting that because he is an admirer of the American right and considers himself a brother— he was given that opportunity, and the Americans could show that the Canadian team, as it's called, is not organized. There were two press conferences. Doug gave one, and then the federal ministers, about 3 hours later, they gave another one. How can you have two press conferences? And I read the Globe and Mail's account, and they basically salivated at the fact that they said— The Globe reported that the Ontario representative in Washington said that he was there and that the American Treasury Secretary gave a master class on trade and American trade policy. That was Howard Lutnick. And they said that that Doug Ford said, "We get it." So he got a lecture on how to be whatever it is, a federal guy talking to a provincial, American leader talking to a provincial leader from Canada. And Doug's answer was, "We get it." Wow, did you wag your tail and bark? This is absurd. If Doug Ford can initiate trade problems vis-a-vis his surcharge, if he can do that on his own without federal say-so, you don't have a Canada. You already have a bunch of premiers running in different directions. That was a disgrace, actually. I hope people noticed. I don't think they did. This is the Taylor Report. I think it's almost time to go, if I have it right. Mr. Duterte, by the way, has been arrested by the UN, and that's UN court. That's a farce. We'll talk about it next week. And Steve Fruitman, 33, 45, 78, coming up.